Good evening. You're listening to Indian Time here on 88.3 KUCR FM. This is Robert.
And Josh.
And we have special guests tonight, a couple guests actually. First up is Professor Allison Hedgecoke from the Creative Writing Department here at UCR, and she's been working on a massive project with the Veterans Administration and the National Cemetery here in Riverside, and we brought her in to talk a little bit about what's going down. We're going to have a little kind of special segment following that. So welcome, Allison. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having us.
And tell us a little bit about this huge project that you've been overseeing with the Veterans Cemetery.
Yeah, I've been working in a project with UC Riverside, all of us here. There's about 65 adults involved and maybe 2,000 children at this point. So it's UC Riverside in collaboration with the Veterans Legacy Program of the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, National Cemetery Administration, and in tribute to those who are interred at Riverside National Cemetery. So we're presenting a project called Along the Chaparral, Memorializing the Enshrined, and we're going to put together a little radio play for you.
Cool. And tell us a little about what we're going to be hearing here in this radio play.
Yeah, so Sherman Indian High School has been participating as one of our outreach schools and have been doing some research in their databases and finding out who's actually buried out at Riverside National Cemetery that went to school there or worked there. Also looking at all their veterans over the history of the school and putting together a new archive that will allow people to reach veteran research there. And in so much, we've received some stories from students and from the graduate fellows that are working there at the school, and we're going to use those for the play today.
Cool. And do you know how many Native veterans are interred out there? Yeah. You have any idea? Ballpark figure, maybe?
Because the National Cemetery Administration does not put gender or race in any of the files of people who are buried there, there's no count on anyone. So it's discovery as we go out. They've put forth military records that have been checked at the time that the person entered the service. So a lot of it is based on that and who we can reach as far as families that are still in the community to speak to and to interview on film. So we also have film segments that go along with this.
And my understanding is, you know, this has been a great tool for teaching research to younger people and engaging in research, right? And can you talk a little bit about that? Like how do we find these Native veterans or any of the other veterans? Who was involved with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So National Cemetery Administration sent us spreadsheets of all the people interred there, and we're updated about every year with new interments. And right now we're currently at almost 300,000 vets that are buried at Riverside National Cemetery. So going through those spreadsheets and doing research on individuals is partly taken care of by faculty, mentor, and graduate student, sometimes advanced undergraduate student pairings. And they look through those names, find out which are searchable that they could take into a K-12 school, middle school usually, or high school, and make sure that those kids are going to get hits on those names. And then teach the children how to research, what it takes to look up things and do fact-checking. Also accuracy to the person that's actually interred, because sometimes there'll be many obituaries with the same name, but it's not the same person, of course. Then a bit of storytelling, innovation and storytelling is involved to get them into the craft of good writing, and then revision and editing. And hopefully in the end of this, it's permissible and print ready so we can load it up into our GIS app that we've developed. So we created a field of mapping over this site. And within that site, we've been placing these stories and populating these stories. So hypothetically, when you go near the graveyard, you can pull up the stones and find the person's story next to it if one of the children has presented a story for it.
Wow, it's so awesome. I mean, so it's really a project that involved all levels of the community and all ages of education.
All ages, intergenerational, we're all over the place. We've even gone out during the time that we've been working on this in involving the community out to ANZA for Branding Day and got all the guys in action out there. So the films that are resulting from this, the GIS application, the radio play, the anthology, I think are pretty substantial.
Wow, it's really cool. I mean, in a lot of ways, you could look at it as a model for how to do this kind of work with government agencies and really accomplish something for the community and
absolutely.
Posterity.
Absolutely.
Yeah, great. So if you're just joining us, listen to Indian Time here on 88.3 KUCR FM, and we will be back after this song. Stay tuned.
Well, I'll have.
Hi, welcome back. You're listening to Indian Time here on KUCR. And right now we're going to get into reading some of these stories from the Along the Chaparral project that we just talked about a minute ago. So stay tuned for that right now.
Hannah Fixico. Hannah Fixico was born in 1923 on the Rosebud Reservation in South Dakota. She attended the Hunter College in New York City and joined the Waves, going on to serve in Hawaii. After her service, she worked as a typist for the tribal agency in South Dakota. In the late 1940s, Native people in cities in South Dakota endured discrimination and racism, often were barred from restaurants and stores. Dissatisfied with the conditions on the reservation, she relocated to Los Angeles, along with thousands of other Native people during this time. In Los Angeles, Fixico advocated for the Native American community, serving as a commissioner for the Native American Indian Commission. Established in 1976, the purpose of the commission was to increase access to funding and resources for American Indians living in Los Angeles. In the 1990s, she narrated the award-winning film Wiping the Tears of Seven Generations, relating the story of the massacre at Wounded Knee in 1890 and its intergenerational effects on her community. In her life, Hannah Fixico dedicated her time and skills to serving not only her country, but also her community and Native peoples near and far.
Joe Morris, Sr. Joe Morris was born as one of four children on April 19, 1926, in Indian Wells, a village on the Navajo Nation in northeast Arizona. As a member of the Red House People clan, Morris took care of his parents' horse, sheep, and livestock before the military. Morris grew up on the Navajo Reservation and attended a government-run boarding school 70 miles from his home when he was 12 years old. It was there at boarding school Morris was taught English as his second language. The school was later closed down at the start of World War II and turned into a Japanese-American internment camp. Morris was only 17 when he joined the U.S. Marine Corps. He had to lie to the draft board, telling them he was actually 18 in order to get his draft card. He then became one of hundreds of Navajos trained as code talkers. Morris was sent to Camp Pendleton, where he and approximately 400 other Navajos received communications training to become code talkers. Morris served as a Marine code talker throughout the Pacific Theater, serving with the 2nd Marine Regiment, 6th Marine Division, including stints at Guadalcanal and Guam. He was a participant in the Battle of Okinawa, where the Japanese blocked the Navajo's messages. Morris was honorably discharged from the Marines in 1946 and married his wife, Charlotte Morris. At the end of World War II, Morris was told by his commanders not to speak of the Navajo code talkers with anyone. That included his parents and wife. It was only in 1968 when Morris started talking about the Navajo code talkers after it had been declassified. After the military, Morris was hired at a Marine supply center in Barstow, California, and settled in the small town of Daggett in the Mojave Desert. He worked as a maintenance department supervisor at the same supply center until his 1984 retirement. He entered eternity at the age of 85 on July 17, 2011, due to complications relating to a stroke. Joe Morris spoke extensively about the experience of the Navajo code talkers during the 1990s and 2000s. Morris and his fellow Navajo code talkers were honored in an exhibit at the Pentagon in 1992, which he attended. Morris also attended a Congressional Gold Medal ceremony in 2001, in which President George W. Bush presented the award to four of the original 29 Navajo code talkers. He and 200 surviving code talkers were awarded the Congressional Silver Medal on November 25, 2001, at a ceremony in Window Rock, Arizona.
Abel Gonzalez Fernandez. Abel Gonzalez Fernandez was born July 14, 1930, in Los Angeles, California. Although he grew up like many Angelenos in acclaimed Hollywood culture, Abel's beginnings were humble. Abel's mother was Indian and father was from Mexico and equally acknowledged his indigenous roots. Abel was the youngest of his siblings. His mother passed away while giving birth to him. He attended Belmont High School and at the age of 16 enlisted into the U.S. Army, where he served as a paratrooper with the Airborne 11th. Throughout American history, Native veterans have served in U.S. armed forces at a much higher rate than any other ethnic group. Serving in the forces is a high distinction within tribal communities. Native veterans served for their country and tribal communities. Their service also became an avenue for them to explore themselves and the world. Abel became very involved in boxing during his service and even took the Asiatic Forces Middleweight Championship. After his discharge in 1950, Abel continued fighting professionally in Los Angeles and in 2013 was even inducted into the California Boxing Hall of Fame. Years later, Abel felt differently about boxing. He shared, "I got to the point where I hated to hit guys. I was afraid I'd hurt them. I sent 3 boys to the hospital and I spent most of my time visiting them." From his crowd-pleasing boxing fights, Abel turned to acting in Hollywood. He featured in films such as Second Chance, Fort Yuma, and Apache Uprising, as well as the notable TV series The Untouchables. His roles range from being a boxer to playing a medicine man and federal Indian agent. He paved the way for Native people in mainstream media, and his service, like many, demonstrate the importance of Native veterans. Abel Gonzalez Fernandez died of lung cancer on May 3rd, 2016 in Whittier, California.
Charles Yellow Eyes was a member of the Cheyenne. He was born February 21, 1934 in Watonga, Oklahoma. Charles resided in Riverside for over a year and was a Chino resident for 10 years. He was a truck driver for Dolly Madison for 23 years. Charles proudly served the Air Force, 1 cadet, and the United States Air Force. He died at the age of 77. He passed away September 25, 2011, at the Riverside Community Hospital in Riverside, California. He had 4 children and 2 adopted kids. His children are Jeffrey Yellow Eyes, Charles Yellow Eyes, Carla Yellow Eyes, Gina Bernal, Richard Groh, Jennifer Yellow Eyes, and Jana Yellow Eyes. Charles is survived by his 9 grandchildren.
Woody Strode. Woodrow Wilson Woolwine Strode, also known as Woody, was a significant Native and African American pioneer in NFL history and Hollywood. Woody was born on July 25, 1914, in Los Angeles, California. His parents and relatives come from New Orleans. Woody descended from the long history of Native and Black resistance in the area. African slavery in the South and forced removal and assimilation of Native people meant that there would be more opportunities for both communities to share space. Despite Woody being racialized as a Black man, he is also Creek and Blackfoot, and his mother was Cherokee. Woody was born the same year World War I broke out. The reality of war was something his generation grew up with. Woody attended Thomas Jefferson High School and later went on to UCLA for his undergraduate studies, where he majored in history and education. During this time, Strode posed for a nude portrait as part of an exhibition to be shown in the 1936 Berlin Olympics. The exhibition was closed as the Nazis' racial cleansing discourse rejected images of Black and Jewish athletes. While playing for the Pacific Coast Professional League, Woody was drafted at the age of 27 into the U.S. Army Air Corps, where he unloaded bombs in Guam and the Marianas. He never lost his love for football and even played for the Army football team in March Field, located in Riverside, California, where he would eventually be laid to rest at the Riverside National Cemetery. Well known as a member of the Gold Dust Gang, Woody, along with Kerry Washington and Jackie Robinson, were challenging racial barriers in professional football at UCLA and eventually, yet briefly, with the Los Angeles Rams. Woody then transitioned into the film industry, playing African-American roles such as a scout and buffalo soldier. He featured in African Treasure, Jungle Man Eaters, and Baruba. Soon, directors and producers began considering him for multiracial roles for what was then understood as racially ambiguous, and played a Native role in Shalako. In the film Sergeant Rutledge in 1960, played a member of the 9th Cavalry. Within the film, he was admired by the other black soldiers in the unit, and the story followed his story of being falsely accused of the rape and murder of a white woman. Woody's service in the U.S. Army Corps shaped him as a Hollywood actor and athlete. Amidst racial tension, Woody persevered. Woody passed away on December 31, 1994, of lung cancer.
Cherry Catherine, Cherry Star Hine, was born on June 30, 1911. She was born in Braggs, Muskogee County, Oklahoma. Cherry was 98 when she passed away on March 29, 2010. She spent her last days in Hesperia, San Bernardino County, California. She's currently resting in Riverside National Cemetery in Riverside County, California. She's in plot 7573. Cherie was the daughter of Charles C. Starr and Georgia A. Starr. Her grandparents were Henry Clay Starr and Jenny Lynn Starr Patrick Conrad. Thomas Richard Madden and Rachel Parson Madden Keyes Lovett. She was the great-granddaughter of Field Starr and Mary Polly Reese Starr. Gurin, John Walker, Jack Starr, and Rachel Starr, Thomas Madden, and Margaret Raven Madden, Peter Parson, and Mary Elizabeth Sanders Parson Boyles. She had five siblings, Pocahontas Starr Ross, Opal Koyana Starr, Jack Raymond Starr, Inez Corrine Starr Smith, and Charles Thomas. Cherie had a loving husband and spouse. His name was Henry G. Hine Sr. They got married on September 24, 1930. They had two children together, Henry G. Stein and Georgia Helen Hine Campbell Conway. What Cherie did in her life helped veterans for the country. Cherie dedicated her time in the armed services as a private in World War II. Following the end of World War II, Cherie continued to support veterans through her work at the Veterans Hospital in Saltillo, Los Angeles, California. Her dedication to helping the United States during and after wartime is an honor. She'll be remembered for her services to the United States.
Joe Morris Sr. Joe Morris Sr. was a well-respected, humble Navajo cult talker. He was born on April 19, 1926. Born in Indian Wells in the heart of Navajo country, Joe Morris was a member of the Red House clan and brought up in Diné traditional ways. Diné language is the center of culture. Indigenous languages express spiritual associations with their traditional stories, which are related to the landscape. Many of the linguistic concepts often hold scientific value. 70 miles from his reservation was a residential school where he attended his only formal education. This ended 2 years later when Japan bombed Pearl Harbor. His school was transformed into a Japanese internment camp. To keep his son busy, Joe's father had him tend to the horses and sheep for a living. At this point, Joe decided he wanted more out of his life and enlisted into the U.S. Marines by lying about his age. He was then drafted a few months later and completed basic training and assigned to the Navajo Communication School at Camp Pendleton. As the Japanese became infiltrating internal critical information, Navajo cold talkers were brought into the service to communicate highly classified information. It was not until President Reagan declassified this operation in 1982 that Joe Morris shared that he was a Navajo code talker with his family. He remained humble in his ways and in his last years of life enjoyed educating the public about the contributions of Native veterans and languages during presentations. During an event celebrating veterans, Joe Morris explained the importance of his operation and proudly said, "My weapon was my language." Joe Morris passed away on July 17, 2011 in Loma Linda's Veterans Administration Healthcare System and buried at the Riverside National Cemetery. This is Josh Little. I read a story on Hannah Fixico by Amanda Wixon.
This is Daisy Ocampo, and I read a story of Abel Gonzalez Fernandez.
This is Robert Perez. I read a story about Joe Morris Sr., written by Rianne Caibatoni.
This is Allison Hedgecoke. I read a story about Charles Jellowise by Rianne Caibatoni.
This is Daisy Ocampo, and I read a story on Woody Strode.
This is Allison Hedgecoke. I read a story by Mariah Alex on Cherry, Catherine, Cherie, Star Hine.
This is Josh Little. I read a story about Joe Morris Sr. by Daisy Ocampo, and a Navajo code talker deserves a second story.
All right, and we're back again here on Indian Time, and we're going to send you out with a little music here, but we really want to thank our special guests, Daisy Ocampo and Allison Hedgecoke, and the great work that everyone's been doing on the Along the Chaparral Project. And so if you joined us in the middle of that, you were hearing stories of the lives of Native veterans that are buried over at the Riverside National Cemetery. So Allison, Daisy, any final words?
Thank you so much for tuning in and being here to listen about the stories of Native veterans and the contributions that they've made here.
All right, and Allison?
Thank you again for having us on, and also thank you to all the kids that did the work on this project and to everybody out there that's supporting, but also to all the survivors of the veterans and their dependents out there and to the veterans themselves.
Great, and that's going to do it for us this week. We're going to send you off with some bird songs by the late Mr. Robert Levi. For Allison, Daisy, and Josh, this is Robert.
Peace to the nations.
Toana Yahweh, Toana Yahweh, Wayom Kana, Toana Yahweh, Wayom Kana, Toana Yahweh, Toana Yahweh, Toana Yahweh, Wayom Kana, Toana Yahweh, Wayom Kana, Toana Yahweh, Toana Yahweh, Toana Yahweh, Wayom Kana, Toana Yahweh, Wayom Kana, Toana Yahweh, Toana Yahweh, Toana Yahweh, Toana Yahweh, Wayom Kana, Toana Yahweh, Wayom Kana, Toana Yahweh, Toana Yahweh, Toana Yahweh, Toana Yahweh, Wayom Kana, Toana Yahweh, Wayom Kana, Toana Yahweh, Toana Yahweh, Toana Yahweh, Wayom Kana, Toana Yahweh, Wayom Kana, Toana Yahweh, Toana Yahweh, Toana Yahweh, Toana Yahweh, Wayom Kana, Toana Yahweh, Wayom Kana, Toana Yahweh, Toana Yahweh, Hato.
This recording is a result of the Along the Chaparral Project of the Veterans Legacy Program of the Veterans Administration National Cemetery Administration with UCR for the Riverside National Cemetery.